Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you candy. Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you an apple and a plum and an apricot or two. Hey.
Welcome to Food for Thought. Join us for a thought-provoking glimpse into the world of the food that we savor. Meet the women and men who are growing it, foraging for it, raising it, cooking it, and who share it with the rest of us.
We're very, very fortunate that we have the support of the community. I know I've been to a lot of oyster farms around the world, and people would give their right arm to have what we have in this community, and so we're very grateful.
Today's guest is Greg Dale. He's the Southwest Operations Manager for Coast Seafood, located on Humboldt Bay. And today we're going to talk a little bit about the oyster production in Humboldt Bay. And when we talk about oysters, what are some of the characteristics you might breed for?
We select four animals that thrive in our environment here in Humboldt Bay. So I am the person that maintains our broodstock for most of the company. So we grow oysters in Willapa Bay, in Grays Harbor, and here. And then we sell a lot of seed to other people, too. So we select for animals that thrive under a variety of conditions. And the way we do this, and it, from a statistical standpoint, it's called systematic random sampling, because at any given year, you never know what you're going to get.
Uh-huh.
So we select for the animals that are thriving that year. So what happens when you do that is, on any given year, the conditions are different than the year before, than the year before that. We also keep very close track of what those families are. We try not to cross families, and this goes back for about 80 years. We've been keeping track of these families. So we have good records as to what's what, where they came from, and their specific genetics. So we try not to cross too many, although there definitely is crosses everywhere on the West Coast that are interfamily crosses.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but by and large, we try to select for animals that thrive, which means they grow fast, they have nice shape, pretty nice tasting, healthy animals. That's what
okay.
we select for.
What is a triploid oyster, and what are the benefits of a triploid?
Traditionally, an oyster is a winter food, because in the summertime, oysters spawn. And because an oyster is, and get ready for this, an oyster is about 70% of their body mass is gonad.
Wow.
So when they spawn, when an oyster spawns, it can spawn up to 70% of its body mass. So they turn to slime, and they're not tasty, and they're not good. And traditionally, this happens in the summertime. Well, about 40 years ago now, they developed a triploid oyster, where what happens is, during the first cell division, they maintain a set of chromosomes. So it keeps a third set of chromosomes in the animal. Oysters are haploid, by the way. And so it becomes a triploid. And it doesn't do anything to the animal, but it makes it sterile. So the animal doesn't become fertile. Consequently, it doesn't spawn in the summertime, and it's good all the way through the summer. There's quite a few different animals that they do this with. They do it with a lot of fish. They do it. Bananas are triploids. There's several plant species out there that are triploids. And so we do this with oysters, and we sell those in the summertime. So now we can sell oysters year-round. It was always difficult to make it in a business where you lost money for 3 or 4 months in the summertime.
Sure. Now, the thing that I see with that is hard to understand is, if they're sterile, how do you make more of them?
We'd only do it to a certain amount of our animals, our seed.
Uh-huh.
So we always have diploid seed.
Okay.
And there is a process where you can take a diploid animal, cross it with a triploid animal, because there is a small amount of triploid eggs produced. And this, you're getting on the realm of my ability to explain this, but they can make a tetraploid. And then if you cross a tetraploid, which produces a diploid egg, with a diploid animal, you end up with a triploid animal, triploid offspring. We grow triploids just for our summer oysters. And the kumos, it doesn't get warm enough here to spawn. Kumo oysters don't get spawning here in the summertime. So we don't have to have triploid kumos.
Because we've got those year-round.
Right.
Okay.
Kumos are fine.
What happens if you get a disease in your oyster bed?
We spend a lot of time and effort in conjunction with the state of California, the California Department of Fish and Game, and the Department of Health Services, looking at oysters, looking at oyster diseases. There are several diseases out there, and we have been watching it in California and in Humboldt Bay for a long time. California's actually one of the leaders. And so we do annual health inspections on our animals, on our broodstock, and on our seed. And so if you get a disease, it can be huge. It could wipe you out, okay? But worse yet, it could make it so you couldn't move those animals or sell those animals. Generally, oyster diseases don't cross over, you know, into a human pathogen. So, I mean, I can't think of any that do, other than potentially some parasitic worms or things like that. But by and large, most of those parasites don't affect humans as a host. So the oyster diseases that are out there, that are known out there, are pretty identifiable. And there's a lot of work been done on oyster diseases. We don't have any here. And we are very, very careful so that we don't bring any in. We don't allow people to bring seed in. The state of California doesn't allow people to bring anything into the state, into our waters, that has any kind of disease potential. We're extremely careful. The state's extremely careful. We spend a lot of time, a lot of money to make sure that that's not happening. I should say that if you look around the world, the Chesapeake Bay is a classic example of someplace that has a disease that they introduced to that bay. And we don't want to have things like that happen here. The Chesapeake has MSX. It's a multinucleated sphere unknown, is MSX. And it's a haplosporidian, Nelsoni. It's a disease that causes, they lose about 60% of their animals a year to this disease.
Wow.
We can't afford to have that here, and so we spend a lot of time and effort to make sure that we don't get things like that.
Along those lines, too, water quality is very important for the product that you're working on. What sorts of things do you do to monitor water quality and monitor the animals?
Water quality is a huge aspect of what we do here. We're growing an animal that's regulated to be eaten raw, okay, in a fairly small bay that's actually surrounded by a fairly urban area. Mm-hmm. I mean, Humboldt Bay is... there's a lot of activity around Humboldt Bay. This is not by accident that you can grow an animal here and eat it. There's been a lot of work, a lot of effort over the last, 100 years to make sure that Humboldt Bay does have good water quality. You, I, all the people that live in this community have spent huge amounts of money to make sure that our water quality in the bay is good.
Mm-hmm.
The collection systems, the sewer plants, the water, the runoff, the way the street runoff is collected, all the signs on all the storm drains around the bay.
Mm-hmm.
We honestly have very good water quality. And the reason I know that is because we monitor it all year long. We do monthly samples. We do weekly samples. We do PSP samples. We do metal samples. We do, oh my God, I 50% of my time just on water
mm-hmm.
quality.
Okay.
And so we're very, very fortunate that we have the support of the community. I know I've been mm-hmm. to a lot of oyster farms around the world, and people would give their right arm to have what we have in this community. And so we're very grateful. The city of Arcata, the city of Eureka, the county of Humboldt are all great partners in water quality.
Okay. Now, what is the eelgrass controversy?
Well, eelgrass is a pretty cornerstone species in the aquatic environment, okay? A lot of things use it for habitat, a lot of things feed on it, a lot of animals use it for refugia. Koi oysters and eelgrass occur in the same general elevation,
mm-hmm.
okay? So where you have oysters and eelgrass, there's a direct impact to the density of eelgrass in that location where there are not oysters. So the thing that you need to remember is that oysters are habitat. Oysters have value in those same values that eelgrass has. Oysters have them. They may be different. They may be different for different animals. But any hard substrate out there is habitat in the bay. So oysters are a habitat type. Eelgrass is a habitat type. Most species will interact with those two types of habitats. And when you have both as a mixture, you have, in my opinion, and many scientific papers say that it's a net neutral or potentially a net benefit to have both together.
We've been talking with Greg Dale, Southwest Operations Manager, Coast Seafood.
Grapes and the cakes, hey, come on to my house, come on.
If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call the listener comment line at 826-6089. You can hear this broadcast again at the KHSU website under archived programs at khsu.org. This program is also available on iTunes. Food for Thought is produced in the KHSU studios located at Humboldt State University. Our engineer is Jessica Eden, and producer is Jennifer Bell. Join us again next Friday on KHSU for another edition of Food for Thought during the KHSU homepage.